It's the Mornings with Ed show. Welcome to the program on what's going to be a beautiful Thursday. We are straight up at 8 o'clock, and as I've been promising, we have an expert with us. Dr. Anita Wong is a board-certified emergency medical physician. She's been in practice for over 30 years. She's helped Doctors Without Borders. She's been at UCLA. She helps people at their absolute worst. And here in Laguna Beach, we've been fortunate enough to have her since 2012. When she established her wellness clinic here in Laguna Beach that she appropriately named Wellness, Longevity, and Aesthetics. To the program, we welcome Dr. Anita Wong. Good morning, doctor. Thank you for being here today.
Good morning, and thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, thank you. I know you're busy. This is a very busy time for you, I'm imagining. And I want to discuss your practice here in town first, if that's okay, and then I want to get into some specific COVID-19 coronavirus questions.
Absolutely.
You established something that's pretty different here in your wellness clinic, and you really have taken a head-on look at how people are living right now. So I guess your first question to someone that walks in your door is, how are you living right now? Am I right?
Yeah. I mean, it makes a difference on your lifestyle. I mean, I always explain to people, when you look at a nice, fine race car, you know, are you going to put in the gasoline that's got particles in it, that's not clean and pure? I always like it because people will put in the purest gasoline in it, the best fuel for it, so that it runs smoothly and have nice air filters and things like that. Well, we have, the body is an amazing machine. I was fascinated with the body. And you put in crap and it runs like crap. So that's the way it is. So food is also an amazing thing, because food can be poison or food can be medicine. And I said, we can just turn it around and you can make a choice, and you can decide if you want to eat those things that you think that are unhealthy. We could turn it around to be something you still like, but just tweak it a little bit and change the mood, the food from poison to medicine.
And it does make an effect, and really people notice the effect relatively quickly, I'm sure.
I just had a lady who drove in 4 hours to see me from Nevada. She'd been suffering with severe right upper quadrant pain. They told her there's nothing wrong with her. She had 2 MRIs. She's had lab tests. She went to the GI doctor. They said that you just have a fatty liver, and you're just one of those people who just have that kind of problem. And you're going to have pain forever. I put her on a 9-day liver detox. And that 9 days, when she did my score test, she had, she felt there was nothing, no quality of life, that she had nothing to live for. There was no purpose. The pain was unbearable. She just was at her wit's end. After the 9 days, when I checked in with her, she said, oh, everything's fine. I'm much better. I mean, it's not 100%, but now she is actually functioning. And that was just because we did a liver detox, because she's got too much congestion and not clearing. And she was actually eating very healthy. She had changed her diet, but it still needed to be perfected a little bit.
Okay. And now, by having a fatty liver, so you can actually reverse a fatty liver, huh?
Well, it's, if you have metabolic syndrome, if you are a metabolic syndrome, someone who has visceral fat. So those are people who are destined to have hypertension, have diabetes, destined to have cancer. She had uterine cancer also. So she's afraid she's going to have a second bout of another type of cancer. Those are your risk factors when you have metabolic syndrome. And metabolic syndrome is the greatest when you have those big bellies. And the big belly is not the buttery outer coating all the way around outside, but inside you have visceral fat, which is the fat inside the abdomen. That's the most dangerous.
Okay.
Yeah, so you can actually improve the fatty liver.
Okay. And your 9-day detox, in general, what do you do? What is the detox? What does that consist of?
I have many different forms. I have 6 days. I have 28 days. I have types, because everybody is not the same and doesn't like to do in the same way.
Right.
But the 9-day detox that I do is just a food-based one. So you just have to go to the grocery store and shop. You basically have no dairy, no wheat, no processed food, no protein. I put you on a specific liquid drinks in the morning because you need to hydrate your liver. You need to feed the liver with good fruits and then lots of vegetables, so no fats.
Right.
And there's a different protocol and to go through that. And then the last day is a pure liquid. And that's an amazing detox. And it's simple. You can just do it from your grocery store. But other people don't want to be bothered to have time or it's just too busy.
Right.
They don't have time to do all of that. And so then I have different protocols that I can use.
Okay. All right. And we're lucky to have you in town. Wow. Okay. This is good. I'm loving hearing this. So you did work with Doctors Without Borders.
Yes.
Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, I was working for several different projects when I was there because I was living in China at the time. And while I was working there, SARS hit.
Mm-hmm.
And my favorite memory and best project that I enjoy was being the team leader for SARS because, everyone was in a panic. And
right.
So they called me out of the project that I was working. I was working with AIDS at that time. And that I had to fly into Beijing. If you can imagine, it was just like Wuhan. Everybody was leaving. There was nobody around. I flew in. I was the only one in the airport, the only one on the streets of Beijing. The streets, you could hear the birds chirping because I was going in to set up a SARS site for there. So it was an amazing time.
So what are you seeing now with the coronavirus and COVID-19? What are you seeing different in the severity of this to SARS? Can you compare the two?
Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, coronavirus is, I don't know if people actually know this, the coronavirus is our common cold.
Right.
So they're, they were zoonotic diseases, jump from animals to humans. And the one that, from the civet cat that came was the SARS. And the difference really was that one is that the case fatality rate, if you got it, was 10%. The case fatality for this has been reported anywhere from 3% down to 0.6 now.
Okay.
So we're thinking that it's actually dropped the more the numbers, the more the testing that we've done and the more that we're seeing. So it's but the difference is that the disparity in the age groups. So if you are young, infant, the mortality, case mortality rate had been zero. I think there was one, so or two. And then if you're over 65 or if you're 80, the case fatality rate is up to 15%. So if you were 85 or so and you got it, then you would think it was worse than SARS. If you were a kid, then you would think it was less than SARS.
Right.
But overall, because so that's the big difference with this one is that it has a really disparity in terms of the age group versus SARS was whoever it hit, it was about 10% all across the board. But so when you average this one out, it's going to be a lot less. And it's kind of more closer to the flu, a little more severe. The flu is 0.1% case fatality rate. But the R-naught factor is what really is scaring everybody compared to the flu is because the R-naught factor for the flu is 1-to-1. If it means one person will infect one person. Whereas the COVID is one person infects three people.
Wow.
So that's why it's spreading rampantly.
Right. And it's going like wildfire through the senior homes, through the senior communities and such.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. So that's why it's so contagious. And, with our testing, who knows, where our numbers are. And maybe there's more people out there who've had been exposed and have immunity. Maybe we do have herd immunity. But the problem when you have a new virus, a new strain of it, I mean, it's not that we don't know anything about viruses. And I think that's where the confusion always comes from is because, scientists don't like to say anything unless they know specifically how this thing works.
Right.
And when it's brand new, they don't know. But what we do know about viruses is typical is that, that they do have a shedding period before your symptoms, 3 to 5 days before, and your contagious 3 to 5 days afterwards is typically you know, for viruses. So it's not uncommon that this is happening with this virus, but we just didn't know. So they wouldn't say. So that's why there's 29,000 articles coming out, right. You know, trying to keep up with the medical literature has just been hard. So I don't really look at the news because I got to read up on the medical.
I kind of
decipher it myself.
Right. I read a Johns Hopkins report yesterday that this virus has an ability to attach itself to healthy cells unlike any other virus they've seen before. So I think my question is how does an epidemiologist approach a fight like that? How do you try to start that fight if it can attach itself like nothing else? Where do you start the fight?
So what this virus did, which is really incredibly intelligent, is because, you know, our bodies are such an amazing machine. We are constantly repairing ourselves. And so, and functional medicine, what I always like to tell people is that it's the balance between the anabolic and catabolic. So the breakdown and the buildup of the body, right? So everything's trying to break it down, and your body wants to be healthy. It demands to be healthy. So it is constantly repairing itself. It's like the highway. So if you have a brand pristine new highway, no potholes, asphalt's nice white lines and everything, then you get this little divot. You got Caltrans out there with their cones, the men and the bulldozers, right?
Right.
That's an ACE2 receptor site. That's a repair site, right? That's happening. So if you are somebody who is relatively healthy with no disease, right, in medicine, they'll say conventional medicine says you're healthy if you have no disease. But in functional medicine, we say that we need to know how your cells and what your body's doing. Now you take that person and let's say that they have a repair site every half mile on that freeway. So you've got the cones, the bulldozers, the men all working there. Now that virus has to have a target, and the target that it has decided to enter the body is the ACE2 receptor sites, your repair sites, your healthy repair sites. And where are those most common? In the lining of the lungs, in the lining of your kidneys. So some of the mucosal surfaces of your body where it's repairing the most rapidly, that's where it's entering and attaches onto it. And lobs on. And that's like one of the smartest things it's ever done that we haven't seen before. So that's how it's entering the body.
That's insidious.
I don't know where you're quenching.
Wow. I love the explanation. That was very, very clear. I cannot thank you enough for that clarity there. But that's insidious of this virus. What if it mutates?
All viruses mutate. So, you know, all this hype about when they say virus mutates. I mean, that's a big duh. That's what they do because they're not an entity in themselves.
Right.
They can't live unless they're inside a host. That's why they die outside, even though, you know, coronaviruses are the largest and they are a little more hardy and they live on surfaces longer.
Right.
But they cannot live outside the body. So if left alone anywhere, they're just going to wither away. So they have to, I think I've lost the question, but they have to mutate. They have to be inside the body. And as they move along, they are very smart and intelligent. They adapt and they change. So they always are mutating. The thing is that the history of viruses, when they mutate, they generally mutate to a less severe form.
Okay.
So that's the most common thing. Now, what do we know that is true for this virus? We do not know.
Okay.
Right. So now they're trying to see what types of mutation they have. But the history is that viruses. So, you know, my assumption could be if we don't contain it and eradicate it, it could be the new common cold. Right.
Okay.
So that's the difference. But if you have a weak immune system, because this this is all speculation because this is not studied or science that our research that I know of.
Okay.
But my speculation is that it's going to be, if it becomes the new common cold, that if you are that 80-year-old or that person with the comorbidity with hypertension, diabetes, obesity, whatever, it's not going to be just a common cold for you.
Right, right.
Right?
So
that's my fear.
It'll affect the most vulnerable when it becomes more widespread. Like, okay, you mentioned it has to have
because they have more inflammation and they have more ACE2 receptor sites to get in there. So what happens when there's the viruses and you have this virus now attached to the Caltrans sites every half a mile?
Right.
So what does your immune do? It's got to come out to fight. So when you have people who are pro-inflammatory, which are people with autoimmune disease,
right,
then they are going to have an overreaction of their immune system. And then you have those who have underreaction of the immune system where they don't fight off the viruses as well. They go, oh, you got a few there, a lot there. Oh, I'm not coming out too strong to hit it off. Then you got the others that kind of overreact. It's like an orchestra where you have everything in the immune system has to be working perfectly as the orchestra. But with this COVID-19, all of a sudden you have the percussion section saying, you know what? I need to go faster and stronger and louder and quicker because you guys just are not keeping up because I see this thing coming and who cares what the conductor's telling us because we got to act now and we got to do this. And that's what's happening. That's that cytokine storm. So the percussion system is taking over, going off and going wild and causing your lungs to drown because they're overproducing and drown and become stiff and suffocate because they're not working in synthesis with the rest of the immune system. That's a cytokine storm, and that's what's going on. So we know, and then when I test people, and I look at their inflammatory system, so I can look at a biomarker. So IL-16, which happens to be the one that is going wild in the cytokine storm on those people, and there are people, when I test their markers, that they have high markers of those. There's not something that I can change. They just have a high response of the IL-16. And so I know that if they're going to get COVID, they better be perfect on no sugar, no alcohol, eating lots of fruits, vegetables, eating all the anti-inflammatory foods, garlic, onion, turmeric, curcumin, all of those things, green leafy vegetables, fruits and vegetables, because they tend to have a inflammatory reaction increased on that. And now if they get COVID, they may go into that cytokine storm. But if they mitigate all of that and support the immune system, maybe they will control their IL-6 and keep it under control and have a milder reaction. So that's what's going on. So I tell people, you got to be perfect right now.
Right.
I mean, this is the time, if any time, if you're going to be at home and do your thing and not go out and not be exposed, fine. Do whatever you want to do inside. Have your ice cream, have your cake, have your mac and cheese and drink more alcohol and do whatever you want and caffeinate yourself all the way up. But if you're going to go out and meet people and greet people and kind of see people and be out there a little bit, just be on your A game.
Wow.
Back down a little bit.
This is remarkable clarity so far on a subject that I'm not kidding. This may be the most important conversation we've had in the last 60 days here. And that's remarkable clarity. So you mentioned earlier that it needs a host. And a lot of people have been protesting that we should open up now and get out and let herd immunity take over, when in fact, herd immunity means that it has to run out of hosts. So we will have infected and perhaps killed a lot of people if we abide by that.
So there's been talk about, my theory, my speculation was that if we had kept the kids in school, we would have had herd immunity. We would have had maybe 2-3% death, but we would have had herd immunity. Now, do you think that if they had let the kids stay in school and there was 2-3% death, that the society would have thought that was okay? I think we would have been, poo-pooed or banned, or there would just be a lot, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. So, herd immunity works because that means that everybody's got infected, but how many of those people survived? So Sweden has done the exact opposite of what we did. I don't know how well it's going. I haven't looked at their research lately, but what they did is actually keep the most vulnerable in and let everybody else keep working. So they're going to have the herd immunity. So they went on the herd immunity side, right? So everybody just kept working, business as usual, keep all the vulnerable in and keep them away. And then hopefully all of those people who are working that are their family and friends that surround them will have gotten it and will have the antibodies and will have already passed it. Now, what we don't know is because what is also different about this one is the shedding period is up to 21 days.
Right.
Like I said, normally we've had 14 days. So we didn't know that before. So we wouldn't have done that. We would have still exposed her. So until the facts and data comes out specifically about this virus, we don't know what to recommend.
Right.
You know, it's all kind of, okay, this is what we can recommend based on, you know, some of these things that we know about viruses, but we don't really know what to recommend. And until we have a direction to see, that's why you'll hear this back and forth of what to do, because even with the scientists, they're all arguing about it. Should we do that? Not to do that? How do you do that? What, you know, it's all of that conversation.
Right.
But so the herd immunity was always a potential, but how are you going to do it? What is going to be your lotus thing? And, you know, it can be used politically, right? So, you know, it's got to be.
And it is being used politically, right.
So it's got to be pure. If it's just pure science, it would be wonderful. And then we can know, because we know pandemics are going to happen about every 10 years. We had last one was 2009. That one wasn't a big deal. Nobody got too affected. We just don't know how severe bad pandemics are, but they're about every 10 years. You know, we had one about Ebola, so every 10 years. And then how much is it going to affect you? So this one has affected us severely, and hopefully it's going to remind us and change our etiquettes. Because all the things that we've been saying, cover your mouth, wash your hands, doing all that, these are the things that we should be doing during the flu season, because we see this spike, and we in the ER are doing the exact same thing that we do for COVID that we do during the flu season. But nobody cares. We put the tents up and we do all this stuff and do all these things because we're getting overwhelmed. But it's the flu, and so people aren't scared of it. But 60, 80,000 people die a year of the flu. So I hope it changed our etiquette.
And with the number right now at about 47,000 in really 53 days, 47,000 people in 53 days, we don't get, the flu doesn't give us those kinds of numbers.
For the flu season, we get about 80,000
Okay. And so what's your thought on reopening beaches and golf courses here in the Southland?
I think that, so as I was going to say with pandemics, it goes in waves, typically three waves. So we are going to see, so we passed the surge of the first wave, so we are lucky, and I just have to say that I'm so thankful and proud to be a California, because everybody took it so seriously here, and they really made my job as an ER physician so much easier.
Good.
Because they have actually done what was required of them, and they've been my heroes. And what that has done is that it's made the peak, which should have been about this time right now, has really mitigated it, has really lowered it. We haven't seen the lowering numbers total. The total percentages across the nation has actually been lowering, but here yet we haven't seen it specifically. But it's overall lowering nationwide. But when you, as soon as you reopen, it's got to be a slow reopening. And I think for Laguna Beach, because we have 6 million visitors a year,
right,
I think that would be a little bit dangerous for us, because we're not just doing our community, and our community is small, and protect us. We have to protect us from the others who are going to come in. So I'm not too certain that it would be a good thing to allow others to come in yet. I think we need to be able to function within our own community and open slowly. And we are still going to see a surge, and then the modeling, those are tools. There's several different modeling tools, so it depends on which modeling tool. That's why you'll hear different peaks, different times, because everyone's using a different tool. And then the modeling doesn't account for what the factors that we are going to do to mitigate it. It's just based on just how the virus is acting, right?
Okay.
So if we just acted alone and just opened up, we're going to have another surge, and it could be higher than what was anticipated for the peak of the first one.
Okay.
So you have to be careful in how you do it, because we could have a higher peak,
okay,
a surge.
Okay. Thank you. We're in the middle of talking to Dr. Anita Wong. If you're missing any portion of this, I strongly suggest you get it on the podcast. It'll be up on the podcast page a little bit later on the KXFM website. Hydroxychloroquine, is it too big a gamble to be giving patients?
Oh, my goodness. I don't know, on a personal note on that one, I was a little frustrated because as soon as that was out, that was a wonderful thing. My patients with lupus could not get their medication. Mm. I was so frustrated. There was a run on it, and people were just taking it and trying to get it like crazy. And the people who actually needed it, the lupus patients who actually needed to so they could function and walk and just do their daily activities, could not get the medicine. So in terms of the studies on how that they look, so when you looked at the studies, the difference between the severe side effect of chloroquine is arrhythmia, so death.
Right.
So if you take it wrong, you take it too much, you're going to die because you're going to have this severe arrhythmia problem. So you have to know what. And the reason why it works in lupus and the reason why it would work in COVID is because before you have your cytokine storm, before you get sick, if you are a pro-inflammatory kind of person, if you took it at the lower doses on that, that could reduce your inflammatory reaction. Now, the studies that they've done in the sick people, it didn't make a bit of difference. It didn't do anything, just cause they actually had more deaths. They had a higher death rate on the people who actually took it. So the critically ill people who they did the studies on, the people who did not get the chloroquine had a higher chance of living than the ones who actually took the chloroquine. So it depends on when you're giving the drugs in this coronavirus. It makes a difference. Are you giving it before the cytokine storm, after the cytokine storm, when they have it? So it depends on their timing of how you're treating them and where they are in that disease process.
Okay. Thank you. That's clarity right there. I really appreciate it. Dr. Anita Wong, board certified emergency medical physician from right here in town in 2012. Thank you, by the way, for opening up in 2012. She established her wellness clinic right here in Laguna Beach, appropriately named Wellness, Longevity, and Aesthetics. And if our listeners want to contact you or the clinic, how do we do that?
So you can always call me at 949-734-0580, or you can book directly online. Go to my website, which is Anita, AnitaWangMD.com. And if you go there, you can email me, you can get my phone number, you can actually book a complimentary explore the practice to see if I can help you and I can work with you, or if you're interested, if I'm interested working with you. If I don't get a commitment, because it's a lot of hard work. So this is a teamwork, and it's not me doing things; it's you doing things, and I'm just trying to see how we can assist you to get you to the goal that you want, and see if I can help you with that. So. And if you also have incontinence and, you know, or having, wetting yourself and can't sleep through the night, I have a non-invasive 28-minute six treatments that also can help with that. Because I think that was one of my things I really wanted to focus on, because that was a fact when I saw in the emergency room was really affecting people's quality of lives and was not spoken about. And men and women would not talk to, even their doctors would not seek help. So I am speaking out for them and telling people, if you know of somebody, tell them there is hope. There, you don't have to do medicine and you don't have to do surgery. There is a procedure you can do that could be helpful, and it's simple. So just go to my website, AnitaWangMD.com, book an appointment, explore the practice, we can have a conversation.
And you have, you have it all. You have a mobile phlebotomist that comes by if you need be and takes blood. And you also have simple COVID screenings prior to your office visits.
So typically what I'm doing now, because it's a wellness, I will do any telehealth visits. I do anyone sick, urgent care stuff, if you're fever, colds, any of that stuff, I see them over on the virtual appointments. So before you can come in, you have to not have any symptoms. So anybody who is well and not feeling anything, even though you could be shedding viruses, then I take your temperature. You have to wear a mask. We all wear a mask because we don't want any shedding in the office. I can't decontaminate the office after each one, and I only allow one person in at a time. And then I have, instead of, I don't do any labs in the office, but instead of sending you to a lab, I have a person that goes to your home. She's fully, wearing PPEs, goggles, and mask and things, gloves, because really the universal protection, and that's what we're using to tell people how to protect themselves. And it's what we've been doing in surgery and doing when I do a sterile procedure, when I do anything in the emergency room. It's called universal protection, and knowing those steps is basically, it's to keep me from contaminating you.
Right.
And then, but now we're doing it, so we're using it, wearing the mask, going outside, not contaminating others, and others not contaminating you. So you have to think of the world as contaminated. So if you touch anything, you've got to wash your hands. Your gloves are now dirty. You know, you could use your gloves and then take it off, and your hands inside, if they were washed and clean, they're clean. But you never want to touch your face, because entrance of anything is really through mucosal surfaces. So even fecal-oral process, the nasal, the oral, the eyes, so those are the things that you need to protect. And I've always had the habit, when I walk by somebody, I hold my breath, because I don't know what they're spewing out.
Do that too.
I've always done that, and especially if there's coughing and sneezing, then I'm going to hold my breath and get as far away until I think that the wind is, and I'm going to be upwind, type of thing. So that's what universal precautions are. So she does universal precautions to protect herself. She's been protected throughout this whole thing. She goes and she gets her blood and takes care of that. A lot of the health is really from your gut.
Right.
So if your digestion and your immune system is coming from your digestive system. And so we've learned that. So having a really healthy internal microbiome is really key at this time. So fruits and vegetables, I can't stress that enough.
Dr. Anita Wong, Wellness, Longevity, and Aesthetics, will you please come back and speak to us, and we can talk more about your focus on incontinence and other things?
Absolutely. It was a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much. It was a very, very cool conversation. 8:31 the time on the Mornings with Ed Show.